F1A, number 21B.
So again, I had to weigh and weigh what those three in the Christ order, Christ triad, was showing. Did they always say the same thing, or what differentiates them? So if one takes Obadiah and says, well, the main common denominator is to bring out a representative, then I can see, yes, Obadiah just states the purpose of the Christ, saying, I want to bring out the true representative, and not the wrong representative. I will put Jacob, really, on the throne, and not Esau, and not Edom. He, Jacob, is my representative. But then when I come to Jonah, who says, I am a prophet, but he's a rebellious prophet, and I see that here the true representative is brought out by first having to reform him to be a prophet. Then I see there is a translation taking place in the one individual, namely that he first rebels and is not a representative, and step by step he is transformed and reformed to be the true representative. And so I see again there is a translation or a reformation taking place. And I come to Micah, there too I see that he first shows what the mortal is, what the mortal man is, and then shows, but that mortal man has to go away, has to disappear. And the daughter of Zion has to bring forth a new representative, a completely new one, the one that is going to rule Israel. And so we get the sense of giving birth to that new representative, to something completely new within us. So it is not just a transformation or a reformation that takes place, but in Christianity, it is the daughter of Zion, the womanhood, that says, I bring forth the remnant within me, I bring forth the true idea man, so that the mortal concept of man just falls away from me. And so I say, well, this is actually again the Word and the Christ and Christianity. The Word just stating the true representative, the Christ transforming and reforming that Jonah, and Christianity bringing to birth the new idea, Christianity. And so I find again, yes, these three have a spiritual order, an order that is system intrinsic, namely it follows the four. Or we go to the next three, and have Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah, as we read them. And we can ask ourselves, yes, we have seen the common denominator. The common denominator is that God wants to preserve the remnant, the idea. That idea can never be touched. And so we say, well, do they say the same thing? And so in Nahum, we could see that Nahum just says, look here, truth is always more powerful than error. Error cannot resist truth. Just a statement that truth is more powerful than error. And just gives a statement that nothing can touch the idea of Israel. But when we come to Habakkuk, we have again that sense of a reformation, again a sense of taking another standpoint. He sees first everything from the standpoint of the physical senses and sees a universe that is evil. He changes his standpoint, so there is a translation of standpoint taking place. He goes on the top of the tower, looks out from principle, and when he looks out from principle, he can see a new vision, that vision which tells him there is still a universe of ideas of perfection. But he does not tell us that the wrong universe disappears. So Zephaniah comes along and says, well, God will destroy everything in the universe that is not right, so that finally everything that is not right in the universe disappears, and there is a universe of ideas like in paradise, beautiful universe. That's demonstration. So I see again, all those three go through the same rhythm. First a statement, then a translation, and then third, the destruction of the wrong and the appearance and establishment of the right. Also, with the last three, we could see that. With science prophets, with Haggai and Zechariah and Malachi, they all were talking about the temple, but how? First, the statement, how to build the temple. Just a statement, how you should go along in order to be to build the right house and not the wrong house. Not the sealed house, but the house of the Lord. And lay stone upon stone, so that that will shake as a carcass of ideas everything. Then we see Zechariah coming, and in his vision he always shows that we should let go of the wrong calculus and translate it into the right calculus of ideas. And Malachi shows, therefore, that we have to get rid entirely of the false service, or else we are not a true priest. But if we let go of all the wrong service, then the floodgates of heaven will be opened, and God will prove unto us that he will pour out all his blessing more than what we can receive. So again we have the statement, then the translation, and then the demonstration. What does that mean? That means that we bring even more order into the prophets. Now we have seen that we should be able to define, to epitomize the first, second, and third step. And so we could epitomize it and could say, yes, always the first one of the triad had just a sense of stating the purpose of the prophecy. So it has a common denominator. The second one always had a common denominator. It was always about the retranslation, the translation back of two-ness into oneness, the translation which shows in the second translation of Mortal Mind in the textbook. And the third was always showing the demonstration of it where evil disappeared completely and the right idea was established. So we could define now the common denominator of those three subtones or three prophets that were in a category. What have we done in this case? In this case, we have reduced all the minor prophets to two indices, to the index I and the index J. So that we have, so to say, discarded for the moment the prophets that have said ourselves, well, all those prophets I can reduce actually to two indices. No more to prophets, but to two indices. The index which we had as that which combines all the three together, And so we could say, let's call that the index I, because it's showing the going together of the Hosea, Joel, and Amos, and the index I, and we have epitomized it as the monopotency of God. Then all the next three epitomized it as the Christ-likeness, the manifestation of the Christ-likeness, and the third, as we know, the preservation of the idea, and the fourth, as the idea of operation in its principle. So we have an index, and then we saw also the subtones of the prophet have common denominator, as the word that says horizontally, it is the definition of the divine purpose, then the retranslation, then the demonstration of the idea. Which means that we have defined an index I and an index J, and left out all the prophets at this point. But even then, we have not yet a real matrix. Even then, there are questions opened. Namely, the question that we have to ask ourselves now, are these epitomes that we have as the index I, do they conform to a system intrinsic category? Do those four epitomes which we have on top of our matrix now, have they a system intrinsic category? And if so, what is it? And so we could say, yes, they actually represent Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Are you with me where I am? Huh? So that from your point of view, it is the Word as the monopotency, the Christ likeness manifested, the preservation of the idea operating its principle. Is this now a system intrinsic category? And we say, yes, it is. Because it represents the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science, and this is a system intrinsic category, the four side of the Holy City. And so we see, okay, then I have reduced that whole index I just to one term, namely the calculus of the four, the calculus. So I reduce four again to one. And if I take in each of those triads the first, then I see it has a common denominator which we called really the divine purpose defined, the second one then the retranslation, the third demonstration. If I translate that into capitalized terms, I have again Word, Christ, and Christianity. Yes? So I can say, well, what is that? I say, well, that's again the calculus. And so I can reduce the index J to just one, namely the calculus, which means the four. Yes? But when I have done that, I say to myself, but that's funny, to have twice the calculus. Why that? Isn't one calculus enough? Why two? And I again have to ask that old question. I have a common denominator, namely the calculus, but what differentiates them? Yes? What is the difference? And so I begin to see, oh, the calculus as the index I is an absolute calculus. It's a calculus of an absolute level, because in those four epitomes, we only have absolute ideas, nothing relative in it. But if I consider then the index J, as were Christ's Christianity and science, I see that that has a relative connotation. A relative connotation. And so I can see, oh, the index I is the calculus in absolute Christian science, and the index J is the calculus in Christian science. Yes? So I've reduced all profits back to just two terms, so to say, the calculus in absolute Christian science and the calculus in Christian science. But still, I say to myself, doesn't that happen also in other connotations? Doesn't that happen in the epistles? Doesn't that happen also in the textbook? How does that 4x4 in the prophets differentiate from the 4x4 which we'll find in the epistles? How does it differentiate with the 4x4 in the textbook, with the 16 chapters of the textbook? What differentiates them? And only now I come to the core of it and can see, well, all those two calculus or calculi, the calculus of absolute Christian science and Christian science, they all have one common denominator, those two indices. Namely, they all have one common denominator, which is the Christ. Because each one of those epitomes that we have in the index J, those four, in the index I, those four, and all the epitomes which we have in the index J, down here, all have a common denominator, always the Christ, and never Christianity or science. Shall we go quickly through it? We have the index I as the Word. We have the monopotency of God, good. That word has already the overall tone of the Christ in it, because it says that God has a power to express itself as good. The moment you have that sense that the Word expresses itself, you have the Christ. You have, as a second vertical, we have the manifestation of Christ-likeness. Well, manifestation is always the Christ. Christ is that which manifests the Word. So you have a Christ tone in it. We have the preservation of the idea in Christianity. Well, that has a Christ tone in it, because the Christ takes care of the idea and protects it and safeguards it. There is a Christ activity in it. You have the last one in science, the idea operating its principle. The moment you have operation, you have the dynamics of the Christ. And so the whole index I is a calculus on the absolute level, but always a calculus with the overall tone of Christ. Or if we take the index J, there again, no matter if we are in the Word, Christ, Christianity, or science, we have a Christ touch in it. Namely, we define what? The purpose. The Christ is always that which has an idea, which has a goal, which has a purpose that it wants to attain. The second one is the enforcement of the retranslation of two-ness into oneness. Well, here you see very clearly that it is the Christ, because it is the translation. The third one is, in the horizontal, is the disappearance of evil and the appearance of good made inescapable, rendered inescapable. Well, again, you hear the tone of the Christ that makes something inescapable, that forces and forces and forces the demonstration. Gain a Christ sense. And so then, in the last one, with understanding, which has a Christ sense, because only through understanding an idea of the word has a demonstrating power and has activity in itself. Without understanding, nothing happens. Nothing goes on. So there is no Christ without understanding. Beliefs have no Christ. Argumentation has no Christ. Willpower has no Christ. So we can say, well, the index I and the index J have a common denominator, namely the Christ. And that's the end of the text interpretation. So we have suddenly a whole matrix that is about what? The Christ. Not about Christianity, and therefore differs from the epistles. It's not about science, therefore the prophets differ from the textbook, because the textbook has science, it's a science matrix. The epistles are the Christianity matrix, and the prophets are the Christ matrix. So in this way, can you see, it's a long way, a step by step, finding out that those prophets have just one common denominator, the Christ. They came after the law. The Old Testament is the law and the prophets. The law were showing the word standpoint. The prophets were introducing the Christ standpoint. So we have in the prophets a whole definition of the Christ. And that is interesting to see that. That it gives a definition through a matrix. And this is rather new in the development of sciences. See, at the time when I went to university, we never defined a term through a matrix. We defined a term like inflation or deflation or national income and so on. We defined it through a sentence. And then we had defined it, and then we had to stick to that definition all through our work, through our papers, through the thesis and so on. Once we define what we mean by a technical term, then we have to stick to it. But we always defined it through terms, through a sentence. Today, and then naturally you can see the difficulty we had at that time when we were studying the textbook. We are constantly looking out for a definition of the specific terms in the science of Christian Science. We could easily see that there are specific terms like the capitalized terms. Why would she capitalize mine when in the whole world nobody would capitalize mine? Why would she capitalize soul when in the whole world nobody would capitalize soul or principle or life or truth? Nobody would do such a thing. So we could easily see there are terms that are important, that run through the whole textbook, that appear on every page. And therefore, one can understand that we were asking now, where on earth did Mrs. Eddy define her terms? She introduces a term without defining them. This is not scientific. This is not a pure scientific method. This is just rambling about with terms. And I know how mad I could get inwardly to say, now, what does she mean with the Christ? Yes, she said Jesus is not synonymous with Christ. Then what is Christ? And you can, and you look up definitions into Christ, you would say, well, Christ is the divine idea. Oh, fine, here I have a definition. Christ is the divine idea. And suddenly she would say, well, Christ is the divine message that comes to the flesh to destroy incarnate error. Well, that's something else. Why this now? And you go from one page to the other and you see always the Christ defined differently. And you can really go mad about it and say, well, how can this be a science when there is no terminology that is properly defined? And so with mind, who on earth tells me what mind is? She makes a capital M and means something else than this mind here. But what is it? What is it? She never defines it. She never defines the capitalized term through a sentence. But she defines everything through a matrix. That's the new way of doing it. So the moment we could see, well, we have to see these capitalized terms defined through a matrix, then that's a new way of defining something. Just as we have here, for instance, the Christ be defined through a whole matrix. I can see that Christ is defined through the in the matrix through the index I and through the index J. Then we can see that she defines the index I through the fourfold operation of the Christ in an absolute sense. Then she defines it further and says, I define the Christ through the fourfold operation in Christian science, how it comes to the human. And if I understand those two indices, then I can build a matrix with 16 point of intersection, with 16 matrix elements, and each matrix element gives me a different aspect of the one Christ, and so I get a whole definition of the Christ through a matrix. And therefore, we are used today that if we want to define mind, that we define it through the mind matrix, just as I have given it in the book on the seven synonymous term. At the end of it, I use quite a lot of pages to define from the textbook that mind can see in a mind matrix, that spirit can see in a spirit matrix, and soul through a matrix. Every one of those seven synonymous terms defined as a matrix. And then we know what is meant by a capitalized term. Yes. So this is showing the inductive way that we had to go. Now, at the beginning of this week, we said, let's take the findings in the Minor Prophet book and let's say they are right, and then consider it from the deductive standpoint. Which naturally then, if we are sure that the matrix is right, that then naturally we don't have constantly to build up in an inductive way that Christ matrix, but then we can take our findings and work from that standpoint. And we work from that standpoint in practice. So often in practice I just take those prophets as the leading thought of in order to handle a specific aspect of a problem. That would be then the practical application of the matrix.